honestly, it unfolded how a national championship anybody would want to, you know? It went into overtime, 14-13, a high-scoring, fast-paced, up-and-down game that, honestly, it didn't matter what either team, what schemes they had. It just came down to heart and how much the teams wanted it. And all credit to Maryland. They deserve a ton of credit for how hard they fought and what they've done and what they've accomplished. And those guys are good, man. They're really good. And it was our year this year, but credit to them.
I mean, this had to be one of the greatest games ever. And the emotions and the swings and...
In a city famous for climbing the steps, North Carolina has once again taken the final one to the top of the lacrosse world. Joe Bresci's heels are back.
That was just the sound of a jubilant North Carolina fan base celebrating their first championship in 25 years, followed by senior defensive midi Jake Mathai of North Carolina, UNC assistant coach Brian Holman, and Ema McEnany of ESPN with the call, just recapping what was a fantastic national championship game. I'm Zach Babbo.
I'm Matt Kinnear.
And this is the voice of Dan Abern.
Can't really think of a much better way to cap this season. So much fun this weekend. But in some ways, I feel like I've gotten a better appreciation for this game going back over the past few days here. I've gotten to rewatch the end of it. How cognizant were either of you guys, I guess, about maybe what a great game we were watching here as this kind of was winding down and unfolding?
You know, I think we felt that the entire time in the press box, it was just one of those games where, lacrosse was trending on Twitter, which is something that it takes a lot for that to happen. It just felt right. And the thing that I kind of took away from this most of anything is the car ride home back from Philadelphia, back to Baltimore. It's a lot of times we're talking about, man, the attendance just wasn't where it should be, or man, why do they play this game on Monday? Why do they have that quick turnaround? There was none of that negative energy in the car ride home. It was all about how great the games were. Then a few things come out, the TV ratings, the media mentions, the attendance being an uptick from a recent string of downturns. Just so much positive energy coming out of this championship weekend.
And I think for me, during the game, I was very cognizant that it was great, but I think I was so excited. I said on Twitter that I was hyperventilating. But then you go on Twitter and everybody noticed it, I think, right away that this was an instant classic. People, I think Danahy was like, oh, this is an amazing game. A bunch of, people on Lax Twitter were like, this has got to be one of the best games we've seen in a while. And I know when I was writing the story, after the game, I kind of went through, all the past experiences I've had at championship weekend. I've been to every one but twice since 2007, and I think that this whole weekend had to have been the best since maybe 2010 when Duke won that national championship. The semifinal they had against Virginia was probably the best game I've ever seen in my entire life. And it was followed up by – it wasn't a great game on Monday, but it was a very tense game. Duke won 6-5 in overtime. So I thought, this year's championship weekend was probably the best since that year.
See, and I think that's a nice distinction, too, because I think all very often in sports we get caught up on kind of the end results of things. So games get remembered because, the last shot was dramatic, the last play, the last what have you. But at times, what led up to that may not have been as captivating. And I think that, some of these previous games, like that 2010 game, suffered from that slightly. But this was really what you want in terms of a national championship. This was a slug-for-slug game. This wasn't one of those games where one team built a big lead and then the other team came back, which is dramatic, but it also means that you probably had a 20-minute stretch that was dull. And this was a game where, rarely was the lead more than a couple goals. It seemed like everybody was able to just make the run they had to, make the play they had to. Just really, really dramatic from start to finish. But I think that drama was perfectly encapsulated by the end of this game. You couldn't have made up some of the stuff that ended this game. Particularly what caught me in watching a rebroadcast was before we even get to the really crazy stuff at the end of this game, how frenetic the last couple minutes were with possession. From about 2 minutes on, both teams got good looks or at least had the ball, and then turnovers or good defensive plays or, you know, what have you, just had the ball flying from an end. You know, I said I was down at the field shooting photographs. You don't really get a sense. I mean, you're so stressed yourself of the ball's flying back and down. You're just trying to run from end to end and keep up with it. You, when you take a step back and get actually to watch it, I mean, I can only imagine how that was as fans. I mean, how much were you guys maybe, you know, watching either of these and keeping up with that as opposed to, you know, trying to do your job of reporting the game compared to being like, wow, what am I watching right now?
There were multiple times toward the end there where we said, okay, that's it. You know, that just ended the game right there. You know, you have the gold stock penalty, which I think everyone in on social media, everyone in the stadium was like, okay, the refs just decided this game. But then, you know, a big stand, and then it goes the other way, and Maryland gets a penalty of its own. So then you're kind of like, you know, the really exciting thing to me was there were so many times where I thought this game was just completely solidified, that the result was in hand, but then something crazier happened than the crazy play that preceded it. It just was, your head was spinning for that last few minutes of the quarter and into overtime there.
Yeah, I think for me, I think my favorite part of the game, I can't exactly remember when it was, but I think it was when it was tied at 13, and UNC gets the ball back, and they immediately go into their offense, and then they almost immediately turn it over, and Maryland gets the ball back, and you can just feel the crowd just, like, get so into this game, and I got goosebumps in a way. It was just amazing. It was like, this is the game at its most exciting. I was so happy. Everybody I've talked to since, you know, since the game ended on Monday, they're just like, it's insane. This game was insane. It was awesome.
Now, so, Dan, you were talking about there was a point late in the game where Maryland had the lead, and you thought the game was over. Can you describe that sequence for us?
Yeah, so I was watching the replay, I believe, Tuesday night, and Maryland had a two-goal lead with 5 minutes to go. And as someone who's seen so many, you know, Maryland games this season, I was like, this is a done deal. How did they lose this game? And to be honest with you, Eamon McEnany makes a point at this juncture where he's like, this is usually the point where Maryland starts to take those possession shots. And as soon as he says that, Connor Kelly takes a legitimate shot, Brian Balcom makes the save. 100 seconds later, the game is tied. So for me, I was like, why didn't Maryland not do that? That's what has prevailed them all season. Why didn't they not go into that kind of like, we'll take a shot, it may not be the best shot, but it is a shot kind of a mantra going for them.
Yeah, it just shows this game, you know, we're waiting for the predictable thing to happen this entire game, and it doesn't happen. Even from the start of this game with UNC, just, you know, even though in recent games they've kind of gone out to these big leads, but who would have expected them to come out with such fire like that and really take it to Maryland in the first few minutes there? And then who would have expected Maryland to, you know, in that point when they have a two-goal lead, to keep pressuring and keep trying to score and not, you know, sit on the ball and suffocate possession? Just so much unpredictability here.
So speaking of the unpredictability, I think really, you know, the game is dramatic to the end. UNC ties, and then really everything goes nuts. And we're going to dip into a little bit of audio of that here to kind of get into the penalty and just everything that ensued after that.
So get, oh, they just called a penalty on Goldstock. Or was it McCarty? There's a flag all the way at the other end.
This could flip possession.
Oh, Joe Bresci is nuts.
This would flip possession.
No face-off in overtime. Oh, my. What a call. Luke Goldstock just lost his composure. Tar Heel fans and the regular fans certainly don't like to see a call like that maybe decide a game. Does his man down unit, does his goalie have a stop?
I mean, these two definitely saved my butt. But, I mean, it's just a bang-bang play. I wasn't thinking. And I can't blame that on anyone but myself, so that's definitely my fault. And thank God I had these two to save me from a lot of mental disasters after that.
Got your back, baby.
They had my back.
Time, room, save, Balcom. Oh, they got contact. They're going to let him play. But Balcom. Luke Goldstock owes him a cold soda after this ball game.
Well, I knew that we had struggled a little bit on man down. And usually that's one of the strong points of our team. Definitely one of the strong points of our defense. We always get pretty hyped in practice for man down. So I knew that, you know, what better time to make a stop on man down than overtime to win the national championship.
Feed inside, Cloutier! Oh! Oh, still loose though! Cloutier. Kelly's going to step into it. No. Skip pass to Cloutier. It's over!
I gotta say, I was a little hesitant to take that shot because I was pretty heartbroken from the stuff before that. that's a play that Tags and I do quite a bit in practice and throughout the year. And you know, when he threw that ball to me and I was hands free, I just thought I could take it, and luckily it went in. I mean,
you do what you do.
That was ESPN's Ian McNamee and Quinn Kesnick on the call from the game, followed by Luke Goldsack talking about his penalty predicament, Brian Balkin talking about the great OT stop he made, and Chris Cloutier talking about the game-winning goal. You can kind of almost start with that one from the end. I like Cloutier's nod to his hesitance to shoot because of that ridiculous stuff that Bernlohr pulled out on him a little bit before that. I mean, in some ways, that speaks to what a fantastic finish this game was, too. You know, we saw three phenomenal plays in overtime. Balkum's huge stop of that Connor Kelly shot, and Bernlohr's reciprocating with probably an even more impressive stop on his ridiculous flyout to shut down, to cross over himself and shut down Cloutier on an in tight shot, and then Cloutier finally sticking it at the end there. I mean, to start with that whole thing, I think one of the interesting things that I took away from this was, how do we remember this game if Maryland scores on the extra man right off the bat, and what was a phenomenal game potentially gets marred with kind of a memory of Luke Goldstock blowing it for his team and you know, just kind of putting an uglier mark on what was a phenomenally played game from start to finish?
I think what happens then is we remember this game as a controversial finish with the refs deciding the game. Whether you believe that or not, it will be the debate going forward of, do the refs, you know, kind of keep the whistles in their pocket in that sequence and not call it on Goldstock? Do they call it on Goldstock and McCarney? The coaches, you can see the UNC coaches run to the refs after that call and say, you know, that's not your call to make right there. You know, I think they're implying this late in the game in the national championship, you don't control the outcome there. So if Maryland scores there, you know, if Balkum doesn't make that save, that is what this game is remembered for. It's going to be debated. UNC fans are going to, you know, think that the losing streak of or not losing streak, but streak without championships continued because of a really bad call from the refs, not because of what happened on the field. So it mars this awesome game. The fact that more stuff happened after that, UNC was able to make a stop and, you know, kind of even the decks with that penalty, that makes it a great finish as opposed to a controversial one.
So I was thinking in the press box at the end of regulation, and I was thinking that if Maryland scores on this extra man, that is an awful way to end what has otherwise been a great season. And as me being a Ravens fan, I kind of thought back to Super Bowl 47 when the Ravens had that goal line stand and Jimmy Smith is going against Michael Crabtree. You know, it's fourth and goal. You know, they throw it up and people say, oh, there was interference on the play. There was interference on the play, but the refs did not throw anything. They kind of just let them play. And I think that's what the refs should have done, maybe, in this game. I thought they should have, you know, kind of just let Goldstock and McCarney either just not throw a penalty on either of them or throw a penalty on both of them. So I thought there should have been a little bit more discretion there with the referees.
Interesting subplot here is Mac Pons was not in the game right there, and McCarney kind of came in for him. Yeah. Mac Pons had some sort of ailment late in the game there. Just another unpredictable thing that changes the course of this game late.
You know, and I think redemption has kind of been a thought with this UNC team, too. And in some ways, that whole ending sequence was kind of interesting in how it plays into that, because Goldstock goes to the box. You know, his defense bails him out of that unfortunate call. And then we all remember Cloutier's goal, but if I'm not mistaken, Goldstock was the man that assisted him on that game winner. So, you know, talk about a guy who was able to go from dog to being an essential part of what gives you a national championship all in one play. And that whole so Cloutier generally that this weekend, I think, is kind of an interesting guy to talk about because he sets the new tournament record for goals. He ties the record for goals in a game. You know, I mean, this puts him with the likes of Gary Gate, of Eric Lusby. I mean, look, no knock on Lusby. I think obviously we all know the Gate name a bit more. I mean, what does it mean to you, think, to hear a guy like Cloutier's name now, I guess, being included in these kind of historical notations?
I just thought it was a very interesting weekend for him because I think what Terry and Dan pointed out in their podcast was that it's really been feast or famine all year for Chris Cloutier. He either has 5-goal games or he has 0-goal games, but maybe 3-assist games. But in the NCAA tournament, it was all feast for him. And he just had a great tournament performance. And, like, I think we were all discussing, you know, which player could, you know, come out of the woodwork and have a huge weekend. I'm not sure anybody picked Chris Cloutier.
Yeah, and it's interesting you use that phrase, it was all feast or famine for him. It was all feast for all of UNC, you know, the last 3 weeks here, you know, starting with that that quarterfinal win against Notre Dame, and even if you want to go back to the Marquette win in the first round. You know, the thing that I've kind of taken away from this more than anything is, you know, Maryland is an incredibly even-keeled team. You know, they're a team that didn't really go up. They didn't really go down. You know, they just do their business. They're very efficient in that regard. You know, they don't kind of let emotions get the best of them. But what I think you saw is North Carolina let emotions get the best of them, and that's not a bad thing all the time. They let emotions get the best of them, so it was all feast. It was all UNC. And Maryland just didn't have the, you know, kind of emotional burst to match that North Carolina did.
So we, you know, we talked about the feast or famine aspect of UNC. You know, what was interesting in post-game comments were about how it, you know, in years past, we've always kind of known the UNC offensive stars. And because of that lack this year, I think there was a lot of people not knowing what to expect. And you can track UNC's season a little bit as to, you know, the formation of offense here. And there's a comment made in post-game, I think, that speaks to that well.
It has been since our early woes at 3-3 that where everybody was kind of looking over their shoulder, looking for somebody to make a play, and some of those guys had graduated. So we understand that we are at our best when all six have to make plays. And once they figured that out, once the light bulb went on there, it's been a new team. So offensively, you know, when you look at some of the output offensively that we've had early in the season, it's a lot different now.
I mean, you know, we saw an offensive explosion from UNC this year. What do you guys take away from this weekend in terms of what made them such a dangerous offense?
You know, I think the many different moving parts all working together is what this UNC team did very well the last month of the season. But I think we saw that early in the season against Johns Hopkins. You know, they won 15-11 in late February. You know, that's a kind of a big early season game. Christian Sweezy wrote a great column then about how, you know, the headline is, you know, UNC replaced the irreplaceable in terms of, you know, the Sankeys and you know, the Bitters and all those guys who have kind of been the focal points for so many years. You know, you had so many good pieces, and it allows someone like Cloutier to kind of hide in plain sight almost, and, you know, just look at that final shot where he won there. You know, this is a guy who has been scoring on a tear the entire weekend, and he's not completely shut off because it's just such a diversity of weapons that they showed, especially at the end there.
I would definitely say Dave Metzbauer had a lot to do with it. I would even say this is maybe the Metzbauer miracle, because I remember watching, you know, UNC earlier in the season and just thinking with their offense that it kind of didn't make sense. Like, you know, Bitter, Sankey, Tutton, they all flowed so well. But early in the season, I was not really seeing that from Cloutier, Pontrello, and all their other guys on the offense. But they made it work in the tournament. That's all that matters.
And just think of how many guys that they have on this offense who are, you know, attackmen converted to midfielders or midfielders converted to attackmen.
Yeah.
It's Metzbauer deserves a ton of credit for taking a lot of pieces that they, I guess, don't fit together in a traditional sense. But he made them fit in a way that worked, and they just got better throughout the year. Cloutier happened to be the guy who was kind of the tip of the spear at the end of the season, but it really was a complete group effort led by the coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we look at this 2016 UNC team, and the big names may be gone, but I think if you assess the roster further, there's no lack of talent here. I mean, you know, as you said, there's just skilled players up and down this roster. And so what seemed to set the 2016 Tar Heels apart from their historical counterparts was this theme of pressure that was talked about all weekend. And we're going to play a clip here now that kind of speaks that. I think everybody kind of assessed, you know, this house money concept, and when all the expectation wasn't on UNC to do something, it seemed like they could finally have room to kind of find themselves and achieve.
So a team that's been playing loose, has been playing confident, and been playing with house money has a chance to cash in.
If you look at our season, I mean, I don't think anybody's won a national championship with six losses, and I don't think anybody unseeded has ever won it, but you know, the pressure piece, there was no pressure on these guys because nobody expected it except for the guys in the locker room.
You know, the biggest thing for me is I got to play as loose as possible. Like, you know, if I put too much pressure on myself, then I'll grip my stick too tight, miss some passes, and, you know, it won't go my way. But yeah, and I think that's how it is for a lot of the guys. We you know, coming in as the unseeded team, it helps with that. We all were a little bit looser than usual, and you know, it really helped.
I gotta tell you, you know, the pressure is a funny thing, and you know, these guys had zero pressure. As you said, they were picked the lowest we've ever been picked in the 8 years I've been there, and last in the ACC, and these guys were on a mission. It wasn't pretty early. But also we had guys playing in different positions early on, so we were trying to find our way. But they continued to trust in the system and get after it. But you're right. We lost a lot of talent, but sometimes it's the chemistry and the leadership of the senior class that brings it all together. And if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be sitting here tonight.
So it really just seems everybody acknowledges that, you know, it was almost like a whole new season this year for UNC with the lack of pressure, and almost a new season within a season. I mean, they went on a very interesting run this year, you know, some tough early losses. They come back with a win like the Hopkins game, then suffer another loss like the UMass game. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about this, you know, players only or a team meeting where kind of everything was said after UMass, and ever since then they've kind of corrected their ship. You know, what do you think of the journey that this UNC team went on this year? I mean, it really wasn't, you know, he said six losses. I mean, this is a very atypical thing for an NCAA champion to come through.
You know, I think the key phrase from what we just listened to, there's the pressure aspect of it. You know, that's me. I get it, and I understand why Coach Bresci and the staff and the players are saying that they felt better playing without the pressure. But, you know, Joe Bresci, you know, he's a guy who's loose. He's heartfelt. You know, I think he's done a good job historically of keeping that pressure away from the guys and keeping in a loose atmosphere. But the thing that kind of struck me more was when he said, trust the system. And that, I think, has been the problem for North Carolina, is they've had too many offensive players who haven't trusted the system. They've trusted themselves. You know, and I think this year we saw that difference. We saw it after the players-only meeting. I have to imagine that was a big point of discussion in that is, hey, we can't go freelancing on our own. We have to do, you know, what our coach tells us. Coach Dave Metzbauer, one of the great offensive minds in the game, and, you know, that led to success. You know, I think a few years ago on ESPNU, we saw a huddle where North Carolina, you know, they were told one thing not to do is go into a double. And what's the first thing that happens? You know, I don't remember the exact player, but they went right into a double on that ensuing timeout. You know, this is a team that this year they bought in, they listened to their coaches, and now they're national champions.
I mean, I know for me, immediately post-game, I said the story of this game is the story of their season. And I remember, I think I was the only guy who went down and saw Maryland play Penn State earlier in the season. And that game got overshadowed because that was the day that Penn State beat Denver. And I was just thinking to myself, wow, the inconsistency in North Carolina's season is amazing. Like, it's just they have these amazing, encouraging wins, and then they have these, like, devastating losses, and it just seems to deflate them so much. So for, you know, for Carolina to just, like, strike fire in the NCAA tournament, that was the whole story for me.
So speaking of that, we have a couple players and coaches talking about kind of this great run they went on. First, it's Coach Joe Bresci, followed by the UNC hero of the weekend, Chris Cloutier, senior captain Pat Kelly, assistant coach Brian Holman, senior Stephen Kelly, and Pat Kelly again kind of wrapping it up.
You know, we're all in the film room and we're watching it on the big screen and hoping that we're going to come up there. We felt pretty good, but we weren't sure. And then we see Navy and Hopkins go up, and we're like, oh, no. You know, when are we going to be up there? And then it popped up that we're in Marquette, and, you know, and then we made it. And then we just talked about being 0-0. It's a new season, new opportunity. And, you know, these guys, again, they just said, look, man, we're starting from scratch. Everybody's at an even course here, and now it's anybody's game. And they were able to beat the 6 seed, the 3 seed, the 7 seed, and the 1 seed, and that's a heck of a run. And
I think the turning point was Notre Dame, when we all rallied back from that 5-goal deficit. And, you know, after that, we just really believed that we could do it, and we had a clear chance at getting this far. And when we saw our name come up in the selection show, we knew that this was our chance and we weren't going to let it slip.
Yeah, I think back to that senior day when we came back against Notre Dame, 8 goals in the fourth quarter. When you do that, you can pretty much believe you can do anything.
And this run was a culmination of so many things. You know, Joe, Michael, and then we continue to move forward, and they turned into a team. And I said it before, a team is the ultimate weapon in any game, and these guys became that team. So it's just been a lot. It's been a lot.
It's crazy. This is the hardest working team I've ever been a part of. I mean, the adversity we had to go through is never. I've never had to go through that playing on the lacrosse team before. I mean, there are some historic moments that will be talked about that our team went through and led to this moment. Some speeches, some just moments as a team, emotion. I mean, so many tears were shed this year. And just to finish it like this, I mean, for Coach Bresci, and, you know, we were all going thumbs up through that whole overtime. That's for his little son, Michael, who we knew he was watching down on us today. So, I mean, this is incredible. I'm just so happy to be a part of this team.
I mean, if I've learned anything in the 4 years, it's you don't want to peak in April. You want to peak in May. And we finally found a way to peak in May. And I think that the culture of this team has changed in a way that hopefully continues in the future, and we can bring a few more of these back to Chapel Hill.
So I find it, you know, I love the comment about peaking in May. I think that's a sentiment that we've talked about a lot in the past in terms of NCAA champions. And I think we've talked about almost every time Duke wins with kind of the way their seasons go. So I don't know if there's a ton to belabor there, but I think what really caught me with so many of these post-game interviews and the like is you hear this elation and joy and certain amount of relief in voices, particularly I think in Bresci's and in Holman's. And, you know, it leads me kind of to another clip I'm going to play shortly, but to you know, Dan, you asked the question in the post game, which I like that even Bresci paused for a second to poke at the wording about, you know, the program being in the wilderness or not. But, you know, this is a common thread of, you know, yes, it's been a 25-year drought, which is shorter than the Maryland drought, which gets talked about a lot. But, you know, Maryland's made a bunch of Final Fours. They've been to a bunch of championship games. The program has, you know, it's hard to say a program isn't living to its potential if they're playing in the national championship, because by the time you get to that game, anything can happen. But, you know, UNC could not get past the quarterfinals for the longest time. They lost in some heartbreaking fashions, be it last-second goals or just be it, frankly, a team that doesn't look like it's showing up in the playoffs. You know, I mean, how big is this in terms of I think a lot of us were not expecting UNC to be able to get to the Final Four and then also knock off the championship thing in the same year. I think a lot of us thought that big emotional win against Notre Dame, they're going to be here and they may be happy to be here. And you know what? That's really not a sin. But the way that they just attack Loyola and win that game and then just withstand everything that they could in the Maryland game and walk out winners, you know, it just really seems like such an amazing jump and such a big hurdle they cleared it in just one sitting.
Yeah, and, you know, the stars really did align for UNC in this. You know, with that team, Dan, you can speak a lot about the history of this program with your dad being a part of it and, you know, having that 91 team there in the audience. And, you know, you really got the sense that this was the kind of the team of destiny.
Yes.
This year for UNC. And, you know, just the fact that those guys are in the audience, you know, for this, they picked that well in advance of this. It's not like that happens just, you know, on a whim when they pick the teams for the Final Four. you just got the sense it's a team of destiny. And, you know, really, like, Zach, when we went back to the pressure, you know, like, you have to be thinking that there's some pressure from alumni that they want to see this happen. And, you know, Coach Bresci delivered it this time. And Dan, you can speak to kind of the alumni reaction from this game, you know, just from your dad.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that was the reason I kind of asked, you know, Coach Bresci that question in the press conference. You know, I grew up watching UNC. My dad was a member of the 81-82 national championship teams. I just remember just, like, going through so much heartbreak as a kid because it seemed like UNC was never going to beat Duke. They were never going to get to the Final Four. And then just all of a sudden this year, like you said, the stars aligned, and it was just amazing. And I asked Bresci, it was like, this team spent a lot of years in the wilderness, so to speak. And Bresci kind of comes back at me. He's like, yeah, it's like, well, once we figured out how to, you know, play with no pressure, and I wanted to thank everybody who didn't give up on us, you know, about how we did things. And he's like, that process, it got us out of the woods.
So here, let's go to Dan's sterling moment here from the press conference.
You know, Coach, your program is a very proud program that went through a lot of years in the wilderness. How does it feel to get this program back on top?
You say in the wilderness?
Yes.
Well, first and foremost, you know, I was fortunate enough to be hired by Dick Bedore, and he brought me on board, and Bubba Cunningham has continued to have faith and trust in the philosophy and the approach that we're taking with family, academics, and lacrosse, and doing it the right way. You know, it's not easy as you're going through and the pressure and all those sorts of things, but, you know, this is for the alumni, friends of the program, and all those who didn't lose faith in what we were doing and how we were doing it. And, you know, the coaching staff, sometimes you have to make a change or so forth. And my staff is off the charts with Coach Metz and Coach Fifes and Brian Holman and my director of ops, Joe Martin. And we stuck together. We stuck with what we do, even when we were struggling early in the year. And these young men, you know, we lost a lot. And we have five seniors graduating. And these young men, they just believe in what we're teaching them. And it's such a relationship-driven team and program. I mean, just great students, great kids, and continued belief that we were going to get out of the woods.
I mean, it's just been a long ride. I mean, we Joe and I came. He asked me to come with him 8 years ago. And you know, it just our goal, his goal was to bring Carolina back. And when we got there, it was, you know, a little bit, I don't want to say messier, but it was just a lot of work. And we just kept trying and knocking on the door and recruiting good kids. And we had to change the culture, and we had to just change the mindset. And, you know, a lot of people were questioning us, you know, why couldn't they get over the hump? Why couldn't they win that game? And there's just so many things that go into it. And you get players, you talked about Marcus earlier, that really gave their heart and soul. And these guys were freshmen when they lost to Denver in the quarterfinals. And you know, they didn't forget that leadership and that piece of it. These seniors took a hold of some of that and carried it forward. And that's what we were waiting for, is just to keep building towards a greater good.
The leadership on this team is incredible. It's not one man. And I think it's really a result of the leadership of the past. Our captains last year, I think of Marcus Holman, my freshman year, showing me how to treat freshmen and how to include them and really create a team atmosphere. And finally, the culture's changed here, and the NCAA National Championship is coming back to Chapel Hill.
I got to share this. Patrick Kelly and I, when we were being recruited here and we both committed here, we were talking on the phone in our kitchens and said to Patrick, you know, like, Patrick, let's go win a national championship. And it took some time. It took about 6 years to do that. But we came out on top.
So that was Dan Abern asking Joe Bresci the great wilderness question, followed by Bresci answering Coach Brian Holman, talking about the whole kind of growth process of the staff. Senior Captain Pat Kelly and Jake Mathai, who I love Mathai, kind of relaying the story of the dream that him and Pat Kelly had that, you know, comes to fruition here. And, you know, UNC walks away. They finally, after all this time, they get their long-awaited title. But kind of talking about dreams coming to fruition or not, you know, we have the opposite now on the other side of the ball with Maryland. This is the second straight year Maryland gets the NCAA title game and second year where they don't walk away as champions. You know, I mean, this one had to be particularly painful to lose in overtime. You know, the Denver game last year, the game kind of got away from them. They kind of probably had a reckoning of what was coming by towards the end of that game. But this one, I mean, to just get so close and to just have it snagged away from you at the end, you know, that's just got to be heartbreaking. I mean, we saw kind of this emotional wave go over the guys on the field. And, you know, what do you think of a Maryland team that just, you know, it's so close and just not there?
Yeah, I mean, I really thought that, you know, the ending of that game was the epitome of the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. And I know for me, like, immediately post-game, I think I felt most for Bernlohr after he made that amazing save. And then he just could not come up with that save because he was screened on Chris Cloutier's final shot. So, like you said, like, this is probably the closest Maryland's been in those four, you know, championship appearances under Tillman. And you couldn't really ask more from the Maryland players in this game, you know. 13 goals, they won almost every faceoff, it felt like. You know, that usually correlates to a victory for them, so.
You know, last night at the Twerton Award Ceremony, I talked to a Maryland alum who was there supporting Frank Urso, you know, who was given the Spirit of the Twerton Award, the Twerton Legends Award last night. And this alum said that, you know, this was the team, was how he put it. And he just kept repeating, this was the team. You know, they've had so many teams that have gotten there and have been very good in knocking on the door of the national championship. But this was the team that was built in every way to win a national championship. So that just makes it all the more painful. Then, compounded by the fact that a day earlier, your dominant women's program gets beat by the team that you're facing, that has to have some sort of mental that has to cause some sort of mental anguish going into this game. You know, all of your friends are on that team, your teammates, the people who wear the same color jersey as you. And that just makes this loss even worse. I feel so bad for the Maryland players. Coach Tillman, though, just completely admirable in defeat, as always. And, you know, this team handled defeat very well, but this one hurts.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, Tillman, I think a lot of us have dealt with him in the past, and we're used to him being a very put-together guy. I don't want to say guarded, but a guy who always, you know, kind of is very composed in what he says, and you're not normally get the dips of emotion out of him that we see sometimes with other coaches. And I think we were all kind of struck by the really powerful emotion we heard in his voice at the post-game press conference.
Coach, when you guys are in that huddle at the end of the game in North Carolina celebrating, what did you say to the guys?
It's tough. You know it's the end of the road. I told them I loved them, which I do. That's probably, you know, reflecting back a little bit, you know, last night you're thinking about game plan, but you're also knowing that win or lose, it's the end of the journey, and that's tough. Seeing those faces is tough. You know, it's been such a good group on so many levels that I'm so proud of them, and I wanted those guys to enjoy the moment and obviously see them smiling. That's the hardest part, you know, as a coach. It's not. It's never about us. It's always about them. And this group's awesome, absolutely awesome. School, community service, and on the field. So I'm super proud of them, and I'm sad to see them go.
I mean, you know, he speaks. I mean, this really was a fantastic Maryland team. 16 straight wins, Big Ten conference champions. And I think most of us rightfully thought they were the number one seed going into the tournament. I mean, I think one of the things we talked about in this kind of wacky season was about maybe it's not about if you have the most overwhelming strengths as opposed to having the fewest weaknesses. And I think it was a pretty even consensus that Maryland seemed to have, yes, they had many strengths, they seemed to have the fewest weaknesses. I mean, they were just a complete team put together end to end, and they really played like that for large stretches of the season.
Yeah, in terms of, you know, the fewest weaknesses, they really had none. And, you know, I think you can make the argument that at every position going into that game, face off might be a little bit of a 50-50 there, but every position, you know, I would have given Maryland the edge going into that game on Monday.
Yeah, and I've been, you know, following Maryland very closely since 2011. And it wasn't pretty early in this season, but I think there was a point in the season when I was watching this team play, and I said, this is the team. You know, this is the team. Like, I had not said that about any of the previous, you know, Tillman teams, but there was just that point in the season when I said, this is the team that could get them over the hump. And like you said, Matt, I just felt like this was the most balanced Maryland team in a long time, where they were not only, you know, dominant on defense, but they could actually, you know, put some goals together and put some, you know, numbers on that scoreboard. They also had, you know, great faceoff guy. They did not, you know, have any woes in the post Charlie Raffa era. They had a great goalkeeper in Kyle Bernlohr, so obviously it was a great team.
You know, I think to me, this Maryland team, you know, as we said, no weaknesses, but this team took a quantum leap forward when they moved Colin Heacock to attack. You know, this is a Maryland team that is just so closely associated with its defense, and, you know, whether rightfully or not, associated with stall ball, associated with slowing down the game. But this offense was extremely opportunistic. Heacock and Matt Rambo, such a 1-2 punch. And, you know, that move of him to attack kind of at the, you know, the first third there of the season, you know, really once that happened and that offense started to click, I thought this team was unstoppable.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, we talk about guys like Heacock, we talk about guys like Rambo, but I think, you know, you could hear the emotion in Coach Tillman's voice there, really talking about his seniors. And I think that is always the painful thing with every coach at the end of the year is, you know, realizing that senior class, you just spent so much time with the 4 years, is moving on. And, you know, what do you – I hate kind of asking these things at times because I think it's a little unfair how they often get painted, but – does this say something about the legacy of this senior team? You know, I mean, are they going to get known as the team that brought Maryland to consecutive Final Fours and consecutive NCAA championships and you know, really made the, you know, I mean, not that Maryland ever fell that far out of prominence, but, I mean, you know, really asserted Maryland on a national scale? Or is this going to be some kind of thing where we remember, you know, that they got so close but they couldn't, which it seems unfairly how a lot of athletic legacies get tagged sometimes.
You know, I think they're the former, not the latter. You know, I think people recognize that they're going up against a lot of history here. So, you know, to kind of peg this on this senior class would be unfair. And that they just ran into a buzzsaw of emotion that was this UNC team. Yeah. And the thing that I love about Coach Tillman, you know, we talked about his emotion after this game and kind of how he felt for the seniors. You know, he's not a Maryland alum. He's not, you know, someone who is tied to the program through history. But you really get the sense that he understands the history of this program. He understands the gravity of this program. So I think he's going to make sure that it's known going forward that these guys are the building blocks of whatever, you know, whenever this national title comes. And I do believe it will come under Coach Tillman. He's going to make sure that people recognize the importance of this class. Not that they're a class that fell short, but that they're a class who built to that pinnacle.
Yeah, I mean, to build upon your point, I think it's definitely true that I think Tillman wears the cape of, you know, the Maryland lacrosse program. And he has certainly addressed the elephant in the room that is 1975. And I think, unfortunately, you know, for these seniors, as good as they were, I think, you know, another number that's going to come into play is 1987, you know, the last great Maryland lacrosse team that people thought should have won. And I think that's going to, you know, that's where a few comparisons are going to come for.
Well, you know, kind of speaking of the idea of building and legacies and the like, I think that Tillman had another really just prescient piece of audio, I guess, from that press conference where kind of talking about the, you know, the way he tries to build a program and the way that even great adversity like this can play into some powerful life lessons for some of these guys.
For some of these guys, it's been 1, 2, 3, or 4 years of a journey. For what these seniors have done, I don't think we could ask too much more. Certainly the obvious is there, but what they've done for our program, you know, for those guys to be in the championship weekend 3 out of 4 years, for some of those guys 4 out of 5, for Brian and Kyle, you know, listen, as a young coach, I wasn't sure I was ever going to get here. So I don't take it for granted. I think for the kids, the experience here is just phenomenal. The closer you get, the harder it is when you lose. But, you know, sometimes you have to step back. I have so many friends that coach. You know, they don't get this far, and they felt this too. And every team almost feels this way. So you have a lot of mixed emotions with that. But, again, it just keeps going back to our players, especially our seniors, knowing that, you know, this was the last game for them, and just wanting to see them smile so badly, see them, you know, just happy right now. There's a lot of adversity and obstacles in life, and, you know, you got to be able to deal with it and move on, and I got to show the kids the way. Some people talk about a mission, and to me, a mission is like either win the championship or you don't. I think when you're working with student athletes, it's about the journey. There's so many unbelievable experiences that these kids have along the way that you want them to remember forever. And some of them are like failure. Some of them are dealing with disappointment, but being mentally tough enough to bounce back and succeed. Because my feeling is we get 4 years with them and we need to try to give them the tools to be successful when we can't be there. And they're going to have a lot of ups and downs while they're here. They need to support each other. They need to be mentally tough enough to bounce back. And then in the real world, They have a tough boss. They don't have a good day. You got to get up in the next morning, come out with a positive attitude, and go out and get it. I know it sounds a little deep, but it's a big part of what we sell. It's what we recruit to. For the kids that come through, I think they have a great experience, but it's certainly you got to be a guy that's willing to work hard or you're not going to be very happy.
So I love the appreciation there. I think it was a very, aware kind of comment for Tillman to talk about how, you know, as a young coach, you don't know if you're going to get to these levels or not. You don't take it for granted. And kind of speaking of somebody who didn't take his shot for granted, you know, this is everything we've talked about so far has really been about the championship game. But I couldn't end this kind of conversation we had today without bringing up, Brown State, Bruno here. I mean, they were a great story all year. And I think that we continue to, you know, they surprise people all year. And I think even those of us who cover the sport got an interesting surprise this weekend with Lars Tiffany and his team and the way they acted after their heartbreaking loss, you could say, to Maryland. I mean, that's a game where they fought back from four goals down to tie it. They lose in overtime. And, you know, I think a lot of teams maybe would be really crushed, really deflated. And, you know, you run into Lars Tiffany and he walks into the press conference as almost a guy who you'd almost think he won the game. I mean, he just has this attitude, it seems to be, where he's very appreciative of everything that happens to them. You know, how struck were either of you two by just the attitude that Brown rolled into that press conference with?
I mean, I was going to say, like, I think... Well, first of all, I think we should point out that I think this was the first press conference we've ever been to where the people in the press corps were unsure of whether or not they had to clap afterwards, because that's how, you know, enthusiastic and charismatic this press conference was. And I immediately says, like, man, I want to play for Coach Tiffany. This is the man.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I wrote a story right after this that between Tiffany and the guys that they had out there for the press conference, they said the word fun 10 times. You just lost the national semifinals, and you're talking about fun. That seems so counter to what everything we know about athletes and coaching, but this is what makes this team run. It's not a team that, you know, I think maybe you'll hear some critiques that maybe they were just happy to get there. No, they're just happy to play lacrosse, and that's what you need to do to be successful. You know, we saw Coach Tiffany at the Tourton last night. You know, they're building a culture, and part of that culture is that they love to play the game, and that's what separates a player like Dylan Malloy, you know, from some other attackmen, is he loves to play the game, and that's what makes them so successful. Really refreshing to see, really happy to see that press conference and Coach Tiffany's outlook on the game.
So this is how Coach Lars Tiffany addressed those of us in the media following his team's loss in overtime to Maryland in the semifinals.
This is a large room. This is a little different than a normal press conference, so thank you for all being here, and sorry for making you wait. Part of the delay was there was some tears in the locker room, certainly some smiles, cherishing this team. Bottom line, we just didn't want this thing to ever end, and we knew it had to end at some point here this weekend. But we've had so much fun playing. And how much fun was that today? That was what a riot that was.
So just, you know, Tiffany just absolutely loving the game. And, you know, speaking of loving the game, I think that one of the obvious storylines from this weekend was the reemergence of Dylan Malloy playing on his broken foot. And all that says about him, all that says about, you know, what it says about the program and what his teammates kind of fed off of that. I just want to jump to that real quick of Tiffany, Malloy, and goalie Jack Kelly kind of all talking about what it meant to see big old number four, you know, strap on his cleats there on a broken foot and hobble out and score two goals in the biggest game Brown has played in 20-something years.
I want to also make note of Dylan's injury. He is one of the toughest men to ever be put a lacrosse helmet on to play this game with a broken foot, a Jones fracture, the fifth metatarsal, is phenomenally heroic. I believe there has never been a stronger effort put out there by an athlete and the training staff. Beth Conroy and our strength coach, Mike Pimentel, endless hours, endless. Dylan was in the training room 8 hours a day. We were delivering Chipotle to him, you know, so he didn't have to leave. And he just did everything asked of him. He was in the pool here in Philadelphia at the hotel, just trying to get the flexibility, keep the swelling down, just icing constantly around the clock. And it was a You know, just an amazing effort by him and our training staff and Dr. Owens, who flew down from Providence to provide the lidocaine, to provide the a shot to reduce the pain so Dylan could do what he could do out there.
I mean, me personally, I was going regardless, but I mean, it's a broken bone. It couldn't feel much better than it was feeling in the last couple of days. But I mean, the swelling was definitely down from last week. Definitely needed 2 weeks for it to start getting a little better. But I mean, I was going to be out there regardless. I didn't know if the coaches were going to be happy about that because I didn't know how much I'd be able to move. But I mean, for myself, I needed to be out there to be with everyone.
And I think it really showed how tough he is in the way that he played with his foot injury. Now, he wasn't just standing there; he was going after guys. It was just incredible to watch. I think that he made our team proud, our school proud, and our league proud. A lot of people look at the Ivy League and think it's a bunch of softies, but I mean, you look at Dylan Malloy, like battling through a broken foot. Guys like Michael Quinn playing on a torn ACL. I think he really proved that he's a tough guy, and this is a tough league.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us were almost comparing this to, joking almost that this was Brown's Willis Reed type moment here of a guy coming out injured and just providing that spark. I mean, have any of you guys ever seen anything comparable to this in terms of the level of injury and what a guy was able to come out and do in a big time stage in a contact sport like this and still be effective to his team?
I don't think I have. I mean, the only thing I could think of was, a few weeks ago when Michael Quinn did suit up for Yale. And I actually remember being on the field, in the pregame between Maryland and Brown, and you're watching Brown warm up, and you see number 4 is on the field, dressed, takes a shot, and plants that foot, and absolutely nails the corner. And you could just kind of feel, the crowd. They knew it was going to be a game at that point. He was playing.
Yet, no matter what he did on the field, his presence there was definitely a spark for Brown. You could say, like, as soon as he came out there in warmups, you could just kind of feel everyone lift from their seats a little bit. That, oh my God, this guy is actually going to play. And to play with that, he described a little bit more about, about the injury. He had a successful surgery, just the past week or so, a few days before the Tourton Award. He had almost 10 pounds of just kind of, dressing, of wrapping, of things around that foot. He had the shot. So when he went out there, not only had he not been on the practice field for 2 weeks, he couldn't even feel his right foot at that point. And, how awkward is that to play lacrosse, when you don't realize that your right foot is actually there? Just a completely heroic effort from him. I can't think of anything that significant of an injury in a contact sport for that significant of a playmaker. Just absolutely heroic effort, and he deserved the Tourton for his whole season's body of work, but that was kind of the icing on the cake, that performance he put in.
Yeah, and just to build off that point, I think the 2 goals that he did score, it was kind of like, I'm trying to think of what movie it was, but it's just like it received the admiration of everybody in the stadium, not just the Brown fans. The Maryland fans were like, wow, this kid is a heroic, thing we are seeing right now.
So speaking of admiration, I think that generally, the Brown's fantastic 2016 run comes to an end in the Final Four. And I think they built up a lot of admiration throughout the year with the style that they play, that great up and down, just bring all you can to the game kind of style. And we're going to wrap up our section with Brown here with just that Coach Tiffany talking about, the philosophy, what he's okay with his team doing, and just how this year built for him, and kind of how an early win against Quinnipiac, kind of set the table for what was going to become the year of Bruno in a lot of ways.
I've had a lot of coaches call me, ask about the system. And the first thing I say, is, can you stomach turnovers? And if you can't, let's just stop the phone conversation. I'll hang up right now. And you have to be able to, stomach these. We had the best offense in the country, if you talk about goals for. But we needed to throw some forced passes. We needed to take some chances. So we had a lot more turnovers. And that's a bit of a function of what we were today. It's funny. I was talking to Eric Feketa, the Quinnipiac coach, and a couple of weeks ago, and he said, we just felt like we were the first one to, get killed by the serial killer. We were just the first victim, so nobody knew, I probably shouldn't laugh using this term like that, but it was, he made me laugh. I think, if that first game we saw, like, wow, and then obviously Quinnipiac went on to make the NCAA tournament. So it's just, It was fun in the off season after the 15 season, going 12-5 and playing fast, to have the realization like, wow, we should play even faster next year. And the smiles that went on our faces, and when we told the men when they came back, like, yeah, all right, let's do this. And playing the game the way it's supposed to be played, in our opinion. Obviously, that's people differ. There's a lot of really good lacrosse coaches out there in the country who play it a different way than we do, and they're probably smarter lacrosse coaches than me. But the way we think it should be played, the way it was played when I grew up in Lafayette, New York, in the shadows of the dome, watching the teams of Syracuse in the 80s, it was the way it's played on the Native American reservation, the Onondagas, the men I played. I was fortunate to grow up in Lafayette High School and play with. And then I played for Dom Starja and Pete Lasagna at Brown University. You know, you look at the scores back in the teams that we played on in the late 80s. You know, we were winning games 21-16 and losing games 21-18. We wanted to play fast. And so this is the way that the game that we believe it should be played. And it's fortunately, we have the great men. I coach great men, great talented men. And as you saw, well-spoken representatives, incredible people. And so this is the style that's going to define Brown lacrosse and Brown University.
Thank you, Coach.
Thank you for everyone. Thank you for all the attention, and enjoy the rest of the weekend.
So as you can barely hear at the end of that, that's the press corps clapping for Coach Tiffany. He, you know, once again, Brown walks into a room and walks out with, it seems like, another new bunch of fans for them. If they keep playing the way they played this year into 2017, I think they'll just continue to generate fans. And I think this season, I mean, if you didn't walk away as a fan of lacrosse at the end of this season, then I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Go find a good book or something, because maybe sports aren't your thing. Because, I mean, this was a phenomenal 2016 year. And you know, sometimes it's rare that you can have such a great year be kind of bookended by just such a great tournament and a great last weekend of the tournament. You know, Matt, any kind of final thoughts on this season and then just the way this weekend played out?
Yeah, absolutely fun. It's funny listening to that quote from that he relayed from Eric Fekete of Quinnipiac. You know, I kind of felt like I was – Brown was the serial killer that was just getting started with Quinnipiac. I felt like I was that crafty detective who was kind of following them all season, because I felt like I saw them early enough in the year where I got to enjoy the whole ride. You know, I know some people really didn't get to see Brown until the quarterfinals. You know, they're not a team that's on TV a lot, but I hope that changed. If I have any lasting thing is, I hope that changes. I hope next year we see a lot more Brown lacrosse on TV, because that's going to make some more fans.
Yeah, and I just think in the era of the whole, like, you know, shot clock discussion and the issues about stalling, that we do have a team like Brown playing as fast and as exciting as they do. It was just a pleasure to watch them all season. And like Matt said, kind of a shame that they weren't on TV a lot. I think the first time I really saw, you know, Dylan Malloy on my actual television set and not like on a computer stream was the NCAA first round. I hope that changes next year. You know, with him being the Tourton winner, they should definitely get a few more games on ESPNU. But final thoughts for this season, it was an incredible season. There's not much more else to say. Like, it was just so much fun, and I really do think that the game itself saved the best for last with that championship weekend and that championship game.
And I think the one thing that I took away is it's a game that's, you know, it's an X's and O's game, but my lasting takeaway is really it's a game that comes down to athletes making plays, and it comes down to heart. You know, I think we saw that with UNC. You know, the game could have gone a number of ways when you looked at the matchups, looked at the X's and O's, but there's something about this sport that, you know, really what it comes down to is there's got to be a will to win. And it's not to say that Maryland did not have it. I'm not making that as a knock at them. But there's just something, for when it comes from a place that's really special, you know, that's when you have success.
Yeah, and I thought that was, you know, perfectly exemplified. Something we forgot to mention earlier was on that Brian Balcom save on Connor Kelly of Zach Powers just diving towards the shot, you know, willing to risk life and limb for a lacrosse game. I think that speaks, you know, to the type of emotion that they played with and, the, you know, just the type of season that we've had.
And so to wrap up what was a great last weekend of the season, full of some shock, some emotion, some bemusement, we'll end with potentially my favorite thing I walked away from this weekend. Joe Bresci just kind of coming to the realization that his team has climbed the mountain and they are our 2016 NCAA Division I national champions.
Coach, we just won the national championship.
We just won the national championship, baby.
Terry, we just won the national championship. We just won the national championship.
It's unbelievable. Congratulations, man.
Oh, God. We just won the national championship.